Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast, getting you ready for the Eastern Conference Finals. The Milwaukee Bucks will host the Atlanta Hawks game one. That is Wednesday night at Pfizer Forum. You're going to be there in the Deer District or watching on TV. You're fired up. We have a preview for you. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And on the other line is Jim Ozarski, Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Jim, I'm in a good mood, man. I'm in a good mood because not only are the Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals, not only did they bring down Kevin Durant and a talented, very talented Brooklyn Nets team, but they're now the heavy favorite because the Atlanta Hawks knocked off the Philadelphia 76ers in their own Game 7. The Hawks playing a little above their station. They're the fifth seed. That was a problem last year. The fifth seed did go to the NBA Finals out of the East last year. But nobody's really going to pick Atlanta to beat Milwaukee out of hand. So, you know what? Let's just start there off the top. That's obviously, the Bucks are taking Atlanta seriously. Many fans are also taking Atlanta seriously. It's hard, though, to look at this series and not see Milwaukee as the heavy, heavy favorite. But what gives you pause? Is there anything in this matchup that tells you, you know what, before we start handing away the trophy, let's at least examine what we have here with the Atlanta Hawks?
Yeah, the Bucks are the favorite. I think when we talked about, when Kyrie Irving went down, quite frankly, the Bucks to me became the favorite, in the East. And they should have, won in Brooklyn after Irving had gone out. I guess now the pause there isn't so much overconfidence. It isn't, the issue maybe they had 2 years ago or 3 years ago in the Eastern Conference Finals where, they went up 2-0 in Toronto and didn't know how to react when Toronto punched them back in the face. So I think two things are off the table in terms of, this Bucks team is a concern. I guess what it would be that the Bucks fan fear or that thing under the surface of Atlanta hitting 25 three-pointers for four times. That to me is really the only way that I see Atlanta like truly putting a scare into this Bucks team, as if that sort of beast rears its head. We haven't seen it. Miami hit 20-something threes in game one of the first round, and Chris Middleton, hit a game winner. But other than that, JR, I mean, that three-point defense, have we talked about it since that game?
We have not.
So I think if there's a quote-unquote concern, that would be it for me. It would be somehow Bogdan Bogdanovich's knee is okay for him to – which, again, he has not looked good the last three games, and Kevin Herter and Lou Williams and, of course, Trae Young just make a lot of threes. I think that's really the main concern if you're the Bucks.
I absolutely agree with you. And like you're talking about game one against the Heat. The Heat shot the ball well. The Bucks shot the ball miserably. And the Bucks still won the game, And that was a Heat team at, relatively speaking, at full strength. This Hawks team is not. You just mentioned that Bogdan Bogdanovich, who we will talk about, of course. Bogdan Bogdanovich did not look good in the last three games of the series. He was very much playing in pain. You've got DeAndre Hunter, who is not available in this game. Cam Reddish is out for now. We might see him a little bit later, but he has not been available. This is not a team at full strength. Similar, I guess you could say, about the Bucks with Dante DiVincenzo out, but quite honestly, the Bucks are just in better position, I think, health-wise. But then I still have to look at, they did beat the 76ers. I mean, they rallied from 25 points back, which honestly might say more about Philadelphia and their health struggles and their issues in that series. But they won three times in Philadelphia. So, I wasn't able to watch much of that series. I watched game seven. I mean, Kevin Herter, like, I'm trying to figure out why is Atlanta even here? How were they able to push past the number one seed in the East? I mean, is it plain and simple? Joel Embiid was hurt and Ben Simmons lost all confidence in his offensive game, or were they doing something that maybe they did differently in the regular season that put them into another, into another tier?
Well, it's interesting because Joel Embiid, I think, we talked last podcast, JR, about, Giannis and sort of the narrative and the thought around. I think Joel Embiid playing on that torn meniscus the way he did, you know, changed some of the thinking around him. It's almost hard to imagine he was hurt at some of the way he played, but he was. I mean, it clearly affected him. To me, JR, it was as simple as the Nets or the Hawks, excuse me, were able to play, you know, 5-on-4 defense. You know, Ben Simmons was a total afterthought. They had Danilo Gallinari on the court, JR, who is, you know, come off the bench, give you 12 points, but he is a total defensive liability, and it didn't matter. Like, he could just kind of go wherever Nate McMillan needed him to go because Ben Simmons was going to pass up dunks. So that's I think credit to the Hawks. Look, they had the huge comeback. As you said, they won on the road. They are in the Eastern Conference Finals. I still venture to say that was more of a Philadelphia collapse than anything else. And yeah, I just think it was they're there because look, Trae Young has turned into a brighter star than he already was. And you know, it is easier to play defense when you only have to worry about four guys.
That is true. RIP Ben Simmons in Philadelphia. But so the Hawks do have a pretty tight rotation, similar to what we saw out of Milwaukee late in their series. You know, you mentioned Gallinari. He's probably gave him a little bit more than you would have expected. And they have Lou Williams, who's a 3-time sixth man of the year. But this is not that level of Lou Williams. This is, you know, this is him on the downside of his career. And then, you know, maybe Solomon Hill, maybe you'll see Tony Snell. But for the most part, they keep it pretty tight. And there is one guy in the starting lineup that the Bucks haven't really seen in this postseason, and that is Clint Capela. He's a true rebounder. Big man, 6'10", led the league in rebounds, both offensive rebounds and total rebounds. He's a guy that is interesting to me because I don't know if they've had to defend that type of player in this postseason, and I wonder how it impacts their scheme on the floor. Could we see more minutes from, I don't know, Bobby Simmons, or are we going to see Brook Lopez be less involved because there is sort of that big man presence? I wouldn't say Capela is a force on offense. He is a 15-point scorer, but he did not look good on that end of the floor in their series against Philadelphia. How does his presence affect, if at all, what the Bucks are doing on that, you know, especially on the defensive end of the ball?
Yeah, I think it definitely helps put the Bucks back in what you would call their normal rotation. You know, we spent a lot of time on the last Point Forward podcast, JR, talking about where did Bobby Portis go? And it was because the Nets, you know, I mean, Blake Griffin was their center. I mean, Clint Capela is, I guess you would say, your more traditional big, even though he's smaller than Brook Lopez. So to me, defensively, the focus is Trae Young, and it's really just a matter of what is Brook Lopez doing on his drops? Like, is he going up and contesting those floaters, which can sometimes turn into lobs to Clint Capela? and in that case, that's sort of Giannis, you know, being the guy back there to kind of help defend on those baselines, JR. So I think it's not so much a defensive question for the Bucks, I think, because I believe, you know, because Capela is not a stretch big, that's fine for the Bucks. I think it's more how will the Hawks use Capela to defend Giannis? Because to me, I think that's the only way the Bucks can, or the Hawks can stay in the series defensively, is to do the thing Brooklyn didn't try to do, which was stop Giannis. And the thing I think Miami attempted, like Capela is kind of like Bam Adebayo, JR. I guess if our listeners are looking for a comp, like, he's a very good defender. So I could see the Hawks saying, okay, pick our poison. Let's try to keep Giannis from going 35-15 like he did the last five games of that series, and take our chances with Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, Pat Connaughton shooting threes. Like, I could see Capela being more of a factor that way than, say, the flip side, because I do think the Bucks will be able to handle that.
You know, I have a feeling, a good feeling about this series for Drew Holiday. I mean, even if he ends up being a guy who guards Trae Young a lot, that'll be a task, but it's just not going to be the physical demand that it was in the Nets series when you had to guard these guys who are great shooters, but also just creative playmakers and physical guys and big-bodied guys. Like, Trae Young is a little dude, and he's definitely going to shoot from anywhere on the court, and that's, you know, something to be concerned about. Although, one of the other things about that series with Philadelphia is that Trae Young had a lot of off-night shooting. He handed the ball off with a good assist count in the nights when he wasn't his best, but especially in Game 7, he was not shooting the ball well, and they still, I don't know how Atlanta did it, but I feel like this is a time for Jrue Holiday to get untracked a little bit. I do think we'll find that all that effort he had to put in defensively against some of the best players on the Nets was taxing and did limit what he could do offensively. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this sort of slump that he's been in since this Nets series began will continue. But I look at that and think, you know, not only will the Bucks still have Chris Middleton and Giannis, but I feel like Jrue Holiday is going to be back in this series in a pretty significant way. How do you imagine something similar for him?
I do. It's not the same. Trae Young makes you defend essentially the half court, but in a different way than like Kevin Durant. I mean, he's still in his second year. You know, he's now shooting it from, you know, Steph Curry range, James Miller range, but he's not making them as often. So I think the Bucks will probably be okay with that. That is not like you want to defend Steph Curry for 36 feet. Trae Young, I'm sure the Bucks would be okay living with that, right? Like, that's just such a low percentage three. But yeah, it's going to fall to Jrue Holiday. I think, and yeah, you know, flip it to the other side. You know, I think the Nets, I mean, or the Hawks, excuse me, are, I mean, you know, they were an average at best team defensively. Their 3-point defense was okay. That was probably the best thing that they did during the regular season. But yeah, Jrue Holiday's just got that size advantage over Trae Young. And, you know, I think he's even just a more physical player than a Kevin Huerter. And Lou Williams obviously is not at that sort of level anymore at 36 years old. So I could see Jrue Holiday for sure. And also, JR, I mean, I don't know if we're going to keep, you know, Jrue Holiday airballing a 15-foot step back or a floater. Like, that just doesn't make sense to me to continue for another week and a half. So yeah, I think he's gonna have to work defensively, but I do think, you know, if Giannis isn't 30-17 or 35-17, Jrue Holiday definitely is averaging more than, you know, what, the 10 or 11 points he had in the Nets series.
Yeah, the only question when you see a player struggle like that is confidence. I don't think a 30-year-old Jrue Holiday is going to be lacking. You know, he's going to know that was just a bad series. He's going to shake that off, and that's probably not going to be an issue here. So, I think Drew's going to be back at full strength and be able to shine here. The Bogdan Bogdanovic injury, I think, is absolutely killer for Atlanta. If they have him, I mean, there's a reason the Bucks wanted this guy on their team before the season. He's a good shooter, and as a secondary option behind Trae Young, it certainly stretches the floor out in a way that the Bucks simply just wouldn't have to worry about it if Bogdanovic is playing, you know, playing injured or isn't himself. I'm trying to find a way how the Bucks don't just sweep this series. That's bold to say, but if Bogdanovic isn't healthy, four game, maybe five, maybe six, like, where are the horses? Like, Atlanta doesn't have the people to match up. They're going to be able to focus so much attention on Trae Young. He's not going to be able to handle the defensive attention of the Bucks' big three if there's nobody else to relieve him on offense. Maybe I'm just like too optimistic here, but I'm just not seeing where the offense is coming from if Bogdanovic isn't healthy. You know, that said, maybe he gets a little healthy, and then I think he is kind of the X factor for Atlanta. How do you see that?
Yeah, it's I mean, look, I know Trae Young and Clint Capella missed games, you know, when the Bucks won two of the three, but Bogdanovic, I think he might have missed the first one too.
He did miss the first one. Yeah.
But I mean, I remember Lou Williams and Bogdanovic having a good game, getting hot. And that's, you know, he's again a $70 million player or in the Bucks. I mean, what I think their attempt was a $40 million sign and trade. We'll see. I mean, it was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I mean, he played 20-something minutes, was not – he made a shot in Game 7. He's only played 20 or so minutes the last three games, not very effective. You know, the minutes maybe wouldn't matter if he was, you know, 5-for-7, you know, 3-for-6 from three, but he's not doing that. So you're right, JR. I mean, unless – you know, he's somehow, you know, found the gear. 2 days off was 2.5 days off was the magic, you know, elixir. I agree with you. It's Trey Young and some complimentary guys. Again, Lou Williams is like dangerous in this way. He's dangerous if the Bucks are up 12 in the third quarter. Lou Williams can score 9 straight. You know, he's dangerous if the Hawks are up 3 and Lou Williams can score 6 straight. Like, he's not the guy right now that's going to give you 25. Like, he's just not that player to me anymore. And quite frankly, I think the Bucks defensively wouldn't allow that. So, yeah, it's again, JR, I'm thinking Bogdanović has got to hit a handful of threes, not just 2. Kevin Herter's got to hit a handful of threes, not just a couple. Like, that's where the power is for the Hawks besides Trae Young. And you're right. You know, it could happen, sure. We've seen it. I mean, we've talked about it on the Point Forward podcast all year long. Teams hitting 25 threes on the Bucks. The thing is, those were one-offs. Those were one game here, one game there. I just don't know if the, you know, I could see the Hawks, sure. They'll hit 28 threes in Atlanta in game 3. You know what I mean? Like, or game 4. And the Bucks clinch at Fiserv. Like, I could see that scenario happening.
Yeah, and in fairness to Kevin Herter, I don't want to completely disparage. What he did in Game 7 was awesome. I mean, he was on another level. That is not something I think a lot of people had seen before, and he could be a problem. And, you know, they did get hot from 3 in one of their meetings, that meeting April 25th, the third of the year, with the Hawks ended up winning. It's 8 fourth-quarter three-pointers. That was the difference. Bucks lost 111-104. They didn't have P.J. Tucker in that game, but that was a fourth-quarter run that was something like 28-10, and that was curtains for the Milwaukee Bucks. So, yes, I agree. Those could sneak up on Milwaukee here and there. Let's go back. Let's spend a little more time on the Bogdanović deal from this offseason. We've talked about it, and I don't know which parts I necessarily want to re-litigate. We talked on the last episode about how maybe if they do make that trade, they don't get P.J. Tucker, if that trade is allowed to happen, and that might not be a sliding door that ultimately the Bucks would have wanted. But do we have, in your mind, maybe this is just speculation, do we have a postmortem on what possibly could have happened? I find it hard to believe that anyone really affiliated with the Bucks had any advantage or any inkling that they would want to share this information. It feels like, and the last I read, reports sort of leaned and indicated that maybe Bogdanović's team decided they could get a little more money if they went a different route, and that ultimately is what they were able to do by sort of sabotaging the sign and trade a little bit. I mean, maybe it was more altruistic. You know, maybe it was an accident. I don't know. But do we have any sense of how that thing fell apart?
No. You know, and this is, I guess, a little inside baseball for listeners. I mean, there is a degree of scoop trading in this business. You know, coming from the NFL, it's largely, you know, guys like Schefter and Rappaport. Obviously, in basketball, it's Woj and Shams Charania from The Athletic. And, you know, they duel with scoops. And that comes from agents, players, coaches, you know, front office, all that stuff. And, you know, Woj tweeted it a few days before such a thing should have even been discussed. Now, the thing is, JR, now, I know how Bucks fans feel about it, but the league said, and I know that we should be, you know, critical and skeptical because it's an opaque process, but the league said that there was communication found, discovered, you know, maybe the Bucks admitted it, that the Bucks had made illegal gun jumping. They didn't call it tampering, gun jumping contact. So wherever it came from is almost besides the point, because to me, someone admitted that it happened. You know what I mean? And if that's the case, then it happened and it is illegal. It's just a matter of, well, you know, it was just one of those times where either the teams trusted the media and it burned them, or to your point, you know, the agents agreed to it, you know, kind of agreed to it and then realized this is our only way out. That could happen too. Having been, you know, on the other end of like hearing stuff, that's, I think all things are possible. We just know, all I could say that we know is the Bucks made illegal early contact. And, that's why, you know, they don't have a 2022 second round pick. And one of the reasons he's in Atlanta facing them this series.
Yeah, I said it at the time. It isn't so much about the way this broke, you know, this way this was disseminated as much as it is. There was a violation of the rules, and not only a violation of the rules, but a violation right at a time when the NBA was emphasizing that. I think that's important too. Yes, we know that this under the table stuff, it happens all the time, every year, will actually continue to happen. But you can't be the one clearly caught in the cookie jar when they just decided that the cookie jar is getting extra security, you know?
Right. It'd be like right now a pitcher JR, you know, rolling out to the mound, you know, a pine tar can. Like, okay. And you're right. And that's the thing. Bucks fans are screaming, oh, LeBron, first of all, wasn't tampering. There's two different penalties here. Tampering's one thing, gun jumping's the other, and that's what they called it. And that was the thing that they, as you're right, they actually made a huge emphasis on it. And the lead, like the players and the owners were like, yes, we need to litigate, you know, pay attention to this. And they literally, you know, I almost think, JR, like if that were to happen again this offseason for a sign and trade, like they'd probably get away with it.
I agree.
You know what I mean?
Right. It definitely felt unfortunate, given that it was the Kings and the Bucks, two teams that aren't typically seated at the big kids table, that they're the ones who get dinged when you know this stuff goes on a lot. But, you know, you said it, players are evaluated differently. And I think that gets lost when someone sees LeBron talking to, you know, playing pickup ball with somebody who might be a free agent. It's immediately assumed, oh, he's tampering. That's not tampering. And it's, the players are given a pretty good amount of leeway here to communicate with other players from other teams. And it's when team officials get involved and you know they're serious, because John Horst got fined before Giannis signed the Supermax a couple years ago now. He got fined just for saying, yeah, we're going to try and sign him, you know, like, which is A, first of all, like saying the sky is blue. And second of all, is about his own player. But that was technically against the rules. So, you know, the NBA takes that stuff seriously. And when the team personnel are involved in any sort of deal negotiation here several days before the deadline, it's just unavoidable that the NBA is going to come down on them. Now, it stinks that maybe kept the Bucks from having just a super great team. Then again, if they go win the championship, this is going to be such a footnote in history. No one is going to be worried if the Bucks go on and win this title, Jim.
No, you're right. And we discussed this in the last podcast too, like the daisy chain effect, if you will. Like if he's on the team, do they have the resources to cap wise, DJ Wilson wise, pick wise to get, you know, PJ Tucker? Maybe they do, because, you know, there was that unique kind of thing with Houston where they already had one of the Bucks first round picks and they were able to kind of swap that and get around some of the rules there, you know, legally this time with pick trading. So, but we'll never know, you know, and that's the thing. What you can say is without PJ Tucker, the Bucks aren't even in, we're not even having this conversation. And without Bogdan Bogdanovic, the Hawks aren't in this situation either. So as of right now, it's an interesting undercurrent to this series, but you know, it's just, that's what it is. You know what I mean? I think both teams are okay with how it all played out.
Yeah. A couple teams made out okay. Initially it was looking like neither the Kings nor the Bucks were going to reap benefits from that trade. The Kings maybe not as much even in retrospect, but you know, they drafted Tyrese Halliburton. They signed De'Aaron Fox. They'll be okay, I think, at some point, although not yet. So we'll see there. Any other thoughts from this series? Any other players from the Hawks? We haven't really talked about, like, John Collins. That's a guy who maybe similar to Middleton. Like, I don't think anybody realizes how good he's been offensively. I don't know if he's certainly not Chris Middleton, but you know, he's a player that goes under the radar. Anybody else that you wanted to bring up?
No, I mean, Collins, you know, and I guess the fact we're touching on him at the very end of the podcast is a little disrespectful. I mean, I'll give him credit. He bet on himself. He did not take, you know, an extension on the table, and he's going to be richly, richly rewarded this offseason.
Getting the bag.
But I do lump him into the group of he's got to shoot a lot of threes and make them, you know. They have to game plan for him. You know, you can't just kind of leave him alone out there. I think the Bucks did that earlier in the season and they learned their lesson. What, he hit like six or seven threes on them in one game? I mean, you know, that you would think that translates a little bit. To me, JR, I think really it's just, you know, I wrote this over at jsonline.com that it's Trae Young versus everybody. And it's not a disrespect to the Hawks, but what I meant by that was he is such a focal point. It's not like Durant in that he can affect the game by scoring 35, but also handing out 15 assists. And he can break a defense in a different way. And it's different than the Bucks have seen this postseason, right? Like it's not Kyrie Irving maybe could have done it, but I don't know if Kyrie with the Nets was going to hand it off 15 times and do and be able to just do these delayed hesitation pick and rolls and throw, you know, these spinning side passes to a late cutter. And, you know, he's got a floater that also looks like a lob and vice versa. Like, it's just a different look. And again, I think Atlanta has a different set of shooters. You know, I think it was Jeff Green and Joe Harris, right? You know, obviously with Durant is, but he, you know, Atlanta's got those, like the more kind of standard 3-point shooters, if you will. So that's the thing. It's just, you know, can the Bucks kind of readjust to a different type of team and not give up 25 to 26 threes four times? You know what I mean? I don't think they will. So then I guess you look ahead and you say, try not to have that happen three or two times, because if it's going to be a slugfest out west, you know, why not have 9 days off before the NBA Finals?
Absolutely. You know, another footnote with the draft order now set, the Bucks, Kane Pittman actually on Twitter frames this really well. The Bucks are going to get Houston's pick second round. This was part of that PJ Tucker trade. Houston gets the Bucks first round. Houston's going to pick 24, the Bucks 31. They move back seven spots. That's it. In the 20s and 30s of a draft, which, like, isn't usually. I mean, the Nikola Jokic's of the world, I guess, apparently show up once in a lifetime, but that's not a huge deal. And so the move back seven spots is essentially what it costs them to get Tucker and move DJ Augustine in the process. So Bucks come out ahead on that deal, the PJ Tucker deal. Oh boy, that one might live forever, depending on how this ends. That might be a deal that's talked about for a long, long time. Very under the radar nationally, but looking pretty good right now, I'd say.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's John Horst. Look, we can, you know, relitigate a lot of this stuff, whether they win a title or not, JR, and maybe it's worth doing. But it was DJ Augustine a mistake? I don't know. We'll never know, to be honest. With Dante DiVincenzo getting hurt, I mean, they kind of could have used a playmaking point guard. But then again, look who they got. So, and you know how that went. So it's, you're right. It definitely was a move that needed to be made and clearly, you know, is working.
The Milwaukee Bucks will face the Atlanta Hawks. It's going to be a party at Pfizer Forum Wednesday night, 7:30 tip time. They'll be back at it two nights later, Friday night. Oh boy, Friday night at Pfizer Forum should be pretty lit as well. Jim Ozarski will be there for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Find everything he has at jsonline.com. Jim, thank you for joining us. We will chat with you again very soon.
All right, sounds good.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Enjoy the games, everybody. This is going to be a lot of fun. Like Jim said, yeah, even if this doesn't end where everyone hopes it ends, it's going to be a very fun ride. The Bucks have a very real chance to get their first championship since 1971. It starts with the Eastern Conference Finals here against the Atlanta Hawks. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We will chat with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward Podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.